right before Purim and Pesach, which are two holidays that, more than any other in the Jewish calendar, commemorate the salvation of the Jews from an evil tyrant. And on Purim, we celebrate the salvation of the Jews from Haman and his evil plot. And on Pesach, we rejoice over Yetziat Mitzrayim and the transition from slavery and the torture and cruelty at the hands of Paro to freedom and the defeat of Paro and the Mitzrayim, both through the Makot and at Kriyas Yamsuf. So in celebrating these Yamim Tovim and commemorating these events, it's, I think, incredibly important to think about one central question: is how we deal with and how we relate to the defeat and the destruction of our enemies. Do we have partying, complete happiness, unmitigated rejoicing? Should there be some element of restraint or sadness because of the disease experienced? Would that sadness be inappropriate and we should ignore that entirely? So in the context of this year, we'll focus on Yamim Tovim and Paro, Pesach, Haman, and Purim in particular, but I want to point out that this issue is still very much a relevant one today and very much a live issue. I remember Osama bin Laden was killed in 2011 on May 1st. It happened very late at night, and the news spread immediately, and even before President Obama made the official announcement saying that Osama bin Laden had been killed, the news had spread, and very spontaneously, crowds had gathered at the World Trade Center, in front of the White House, at other iconic American sites, at other gathering places. Times Square was packed, and people had brought with them flags, other symbols of America, and people were singing the national anthem, chanting USA, USA, and there was really a visceral reaction and just a very emotional celebration over the fact that Osama bin Laden had been killed, and this is 2011, so it's a very recent happening. I remember seeing the pictures of people standing and cheering right outside the White House gate. And in the aftermath of that event, of those reactions, there was a debate in various newspapers, on TV, and the public discourse about whether or not that kind of reaction over the killing of an enemy was appropriate. Is it appropriate to sing the national anthem and chant and cheer? Was that a wonderful thing, or was that problematic? Was there something wrong with it? And if you look at the two unnumbered sources here on the source sheet, not traditional sources for a share, but they reflect this debate. So the first line here is from an article by Leon Wieseltier, who is the former literary editor of the New Republic. And you could tell exactly what he thought from the title of his article, which was "Osama Bin Gotten, The Case for Joy." So he actually writes in this article that he went down himself to the White House, was standing in front of the White House gates and sung along as people sang the national anthem and held up the Osama Bin Gotten was a sign that someone had been holding up at that particular celebration, which is how he got the title of his article. And he writes, "Bin Laden represented one of the most poisonous ideas of our time, the restoration by means of sanctified violence of a human world without rights. There is no decent man or woman anywhere who does not wish to see this armed political theology defeated. If any death justifies rejoicing, the death of Osama bin Laden does." So he very firmly, in his article, The Case for Joy, thought joy is the right reaction, and celebrating when someone who represents such an evil idea and had attacked, was planning to attack, was continuing to attack Americans and other people who represented ideas of freedom, that was the appropriate reaction. An opposing view, again, you could tell what the author here is thinking, was written in Salon magazine. The title is USA, USA is the Wrong Response. And he wrote, the author here is David Sirota, the contributing author at Salon magazine, about Osama bin Laden, that he's helped drag us down into his sick nihilism by making us like too many other bellicose societies in history, the ones that aggressively cheer on killing as long as it is the bad guy that's being killed. So he argued, This is kind of a bloodthirsty, vengeful, vindictive reaction. And it might be a good thing, and we might all agree that Osama bin Laden should have been killed, but this kind of cheering and, like, sports stadium, go Yankees, USA, USA kind of reaction, and that type of celebration is really inappropriate. So I'm not going to get into details of their arguments and what they said about Osama bin Laden in particular, but it's just two examples of very different perspectives about his death. And the conversation here in 2011, they both were in on May 2nd, was the day after this had happened, shows that this is an issue people still struggle with. It's very much a live issue. We still, both as Jews, certainly Israel, as Americans, have very real enemies who, of the magnitude of Haman and Paro, who would seek to destroy us and kill us entirely. And so how to react and what the appropriate reaction is at the defeat or death of a villain like that is still very much a live question. The one caveat that I want to add to the shir is something I thought about a couple of weeks ago after Justice Scalia passed away. So Justice Scalia, the Supreme Court justice, he passed away not even a week and a half ago. And there were in certain corners of the political public spectrum in the U.S., certain people who rejoiced and said, well, isn't this a wonderful thing, and I hated all his views, and he's so terrible, and I'm thrilled that he died. That reaction existed. So it's important to state that in this year when we talk about enemies, we're talking about real enemies, like the Paro and the Hamans and the Osamas, who are really evil people who have sought your destruction, are seeking your destruction. Whatever you think about Justice Scalia's interpretive theories of the Constitution, he does not fall into that category at all. So if you look, the third English source on the source sheet is written by Stephen Carter. He's actually a professor of mine at Yale Law School. And he wrote an opinion piece in response to this phenomenon of what he saw as people. So he cites in his article, someone actually wrote ridiculously that they felt safer after the death of Justice Scalia than they did after the death of Osama bin Laden. How that's possible or makes any sense, I can't tell you. But here's, again, you can tell from the title, he says, Scalia's grave dancers deserve a harsh verdict. And he writes, nowadays we burn too much energy evaluating people based on whether we agree with them or not. It's tragic that we can't respect and admire each other across our many differences. It's worse that we dance when people die. So when we talk about, we'll focus on the pasuk of Ben Pole Vecha Al Tismach, don't dance to the joys of enemies. We're talking about real enemies and not people whose views you really don't like or really disagree with or prefer that they would have said something else. We're focusing on Haman and Paro. So now we'll turn to the first Hebrew source, listed source number one here from Mishle. And the conversation, the sources really focus around this pasuk. So Mishle in Perek Chaf Dalet, Psukim Yud Zayin through Yud Chet. Ben Pol Evecha Al Tismach, in the fall of your enemy, do not rejoice. Uvi Kashlo Al Yigali Becha, and in his stumbling, let not your heart rejoice. Pen Yireh Hashem, lest Hashem see your reaction. V'rabe Einav, and it will be bad in his eyes. V'heshiv Me'alav Alpo. And there are a few different ways to interpret this phrase. The most standard one is that God will withdraw his anger from your enemy, or another slight variation is that God will shift the anger from the enemy to you. So this is the basis in the Torah, or the basic pasuk that spurs this conversation of people who are your enemies and your real enemies. When they're defeated or when they fall or when they're destroyed, that shouldn't be cause for celebration. And source number two here is a Mishnah in Avot. It's actually a very unusual Mishnah, and we'll see in a minute. Shmuel HaKatan Omer, Shmuel HaKatan says, and he just quotes the pasuk, Ben Pali Becha Al Tismach, Uvi Kashal Yigali Becha, and pasuk Yirchet, Pen Yirah Hashem V'Rabbeinu, V'Hishiv Me'alav Apo. This source is very unusual in that it's a Mishnah that doesn't do anything other than quote a pasuk. He just cites two psukim, and that's it. He doesn't add any explanation, cite a part of a pasuk, and add some commentary. It's just full psukim, and he leaves it at that. That's just the end of the Mishnah. So we'll see cited a little later, but a lot of Mefarshim comment in the Mishnah and say this is very weird. You don't usually have a Mishnah that just we have the Pasuk. We could just have read the Pasuk without just repeating the Pasuk without giving any further explanation. So the Malbim, we'll see later, explains and others similarly explain that the point here is just that the value, Shmuel Katzen felt, the value was so important and it was something that people so frequently mess up on or are confused by that it was worth just repeating the Pasuk, just to emphasize that Pasuk, just to make that point, even without adding any explanation, just sort of a reminder, pointing to the Pasuk and saying that's really important. Don't forget about that Pasuk. We have to keep that in mind. So this is the basic sources that will set the frame for our discussion. And next I'll jump into looking at how this idea impacts our actual celebration on Purim and on Pesach and more broadly other Yomim Tovim. And after we look at how it influences our actual celebration, I'll talk about why. Why is it bad to celebrate? Maybe we should be celebrating, or different limitations, different views of what celebrations might be appropriate and what might be inappropriate. But before I jump into the discussion about Yomim Tovim, do you want to look for examples of people celebrating when their enemies are destroyed? You really just have to open the Torah. Because if you look at the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim, we have Oz Yashir. And in Oz Yashir, we talk about the drowning and the destruction of the Mitzrayim. And if you look at Shirat Devorah in Sefer Shmuel, you'll see Devorah talks about the defeat of her enemies and mentions specifically how Sisera, the enemy general, was killed at the hands of Yael. It's alluded to not completely directly, but fairly explicitly. So on one hand, we have these psukim that say this is a bad thing, and Shmuel Katan says, yeah, that's really, really important. On the other hand, you could find examples in Tanakh, seemingly many examples, where rejoicing and even mentioning and celebrating and singing about the death of an enemy is done many times, and the Torah doesn't seem to view that in a negative light. Or we say Oz Yashir every day. That's considered a piece of beautiful poetry and a way to honor and commemorate Yetziat Mitzrayim, and we don't view that reaction with any sort of negativity. So again, you see this sort of tension between, on one hand, this idea exists, it's an important idea, but it also seems to conflict maybe with our intuitions and also with what we actually find in Tanakh of how people are reacting. So then we'll head into the section application to Yomim Tovim and see how this idea broadly influences our attitudes and our practice on Pesach and other Yomim Tovim. So the source number four, this is Masechet Megillah on Yud Amud Bet. The Gemara here says, Amar Rabbi Yochanan says, Ma'i dechtiv ala korab zeh al zeh kol halayla. So what does it mean that they didn't catch up or they didn't reach one another all night? So this is from the context of Shemot discussing Kriyat Yamsuf. The obvious meaning of this pasuk from context is pretty clear, that the Mitzrayim didn't reach the Jews all night. So this is clearly a more midrashic explanation of this pasuk. So the answer given is Bikshu Malachei Hashareit Lomar Shira. So the Malachim, the angels, are trying to approach Hashem to say Shira over what's going down on earth, over Kriyat Yamsuf and the clear success of the Jews at this time. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and Hashem's response is Masei Yadai Tovim Bayam. My handiwork, my creatures, are drowning in the water of Atema Rim Shira. Human beings that I made, even if they're evil, they're the Mitzrayim, are drowning at sea, and you're going to say Shira to me? There's obviously an irony here, in that Hashem is drowning them. It's clearly, the story is portrayed as Hashem having a very active hand. This is his work. He's drowning his own handiwork. And yet, the Gemara still inserts or sees an element of sadness or an element of restraint that would be appropriate, even though it's Hashem clearly thinks it's the right thing and is drowning his own creatures. The Gemara still has Hashem saying, well, don't approach me and sing Shira to me right now. I don't want to hear that. because they're still, even if I'm doing this and this is the right thing and they deserve it, there's still an element of restraint or sadness that requires that you not sing Shira to me right now. And source number 5 here has a similar perspective. This is the Yalkut Shimoni, which is a collection of Midrashim. And none of these sources mention the pasuk of Bin Pal Aivecha particularly, but it's clearly a similar idea. The Yalkut Shimoni says, Atamotzei Shlos Machot Ketiv Vachag. When it comes to the holiday of Sukkot, the word Simcha, or some variation of the word Simcha, shows up 3 times in the Torah. We have V'Samachta B'Chagecha, V'Hayita Achsameach, U'Smachtem L'Fnei Hashem Elokechem Shivat Yamim. So there are 3 different times that the Torah associates the concept of Simcha with Sukkot, which we know in some form also commemorates or reflects Yetziat Mitzrayim. But Aval B'Pesach, when it comes to Pesach, Eina Tamotzei Sheketuv Bo Afilu Simcha Achat. But when it comes to Pesach, the Torah never used the word Simcha, happiness, in association with the holiday of Pesach, even though it does 3 times when it comes to Sukkot, which the Midrash thinks is kind of weird. Lama, so why is that? B'shvil shemetu bo hamitzrim. The reason that Sukkot has a strong emphasis on Simcha and Pesach does not, according to the Midrash, is because the Mitzrim died. Right? So I don't think the Midrash is saying that there should be no Simcha on Pesach, but it emphasizes that there are a different level of celebration, a different level of rejoicing on Pesach than on Sukkot, because of the fact that the Mitzrim, who we all agree are evil characters in our story, because they died, that's reason for restraint. And you'll see here in source 6, the Beit Yosef takes this idea based on other sources. Sources 4 and 5 talk about the idea in abstract that we should restrain our happiness, and the Beit Yosef here will take this abstract idea of restraining happiness and apply it in a very concrete, specific way that impacts how we act on Pesach. So Beit Yosef says, Kol ha'yamim shel Chol HaMoed, all days of Chol HaMoed, u'shnei yamim tovim achronim shel Yom Tov, and the last days on Pesach, korin ha'halel ve'in gomrin oto. So we say Halel, but on Pesach, as you know, we say an incomplete Halel. Right, as opposed to on Sukkot, for example. Kach mufrash be'erchin, perik bet, nidom and bet. So that's clear that that is our practice from the Gemara. V'hatam yavin atama mashna b'chag damrinan kol yoma mashna b'pesel delor minan kol yoma. And the Gemara in Erchin had asked this question, what's the difference between Sukkot and Pesach, that on Sukkot we say the full hallel all days, and on Pesach we don't. And the Gemara there actually offers its own answer, not cited by the Beit Yosef. Or one answer, which has to do with the fact that on Sukkot we have a new karbon every day, and so the level of simcha always increases, and therefore you should have a new full hallel every single day. And since that's not true on Pesach, the full simcha is just on the first day, and then you have a lesser hallel for the rest of the day, so it connects it to karbono. But even though the Gemara gives one answer, the Beit Yosef cites another answer from the Shibboleth HaLeket, a katav b'shem Midrash Harninu, that the Shibboleth HaLeket wrote in the name of the Midrash Harninu, in Parshat Sukkah, Shehatam she'en gormin ha'alel, the reason that we have an incomplete halal on Pesach, Kol Yomei Pesach hu lefi shenitvu ha'mitzrim, is again connected to this idea that because the Mitzrim were drowning, or we say that Kiryat Yamsuf is on the seventh day, because of the death of the Mitzrim, v'chtiv ben poi v'chal tesmach, that because we have this idea that you shouldn't be celebrating completely, fully, or rejoicing fully, because of the death of the Mitzrayim, that's another reason why we don't say the full Hallel, all 7 days of Pesach, the way that we do on Sukkot. So here's an example. You see this broad, abstract idea of having a little bit of a restrained Simcha apply in a very concrete, practical way on Pesach. And this source 7 here, this is Shut Yabia Omer, it's the response of Rav Avadi Yosef, former Sfardi Chief Rabbi, passed away just a couple of years ago. And this is actually, I think, a fascinating source. He was discussing, this is a very long shiva that he has, about whether it's appropriate to say Hallel and Yom Ha'atzmaut. So there's a lot of different considerations. But one of the things he mentions in this discussion is this issue. And he says, V'lchora yesh lamar od, l'fi mashu perish meron ha'Beit Yosef. And he says, you know, apparently we should say, based on what based on the source six, based on what the Beit Yosef had actually said about Pesach, right, based on what the Beit Yosef said, that we don't say a full hallel because the Mitzrim were drowning at the sea on Pesach, and because of this idea that we should have not be rejoicing at the death of our enemies. That in our case, he's talking about Yom Ha'atzma'ut, that through the wars, through the War of Independence in particular, many people were killed, Mibnei Brit, Jewish people, obviously, and Mishainim Bnei Brit, and people who were non-Jews, and here he's referencing the idea of Ben Poi Vechal Tesmach, so he's saying lots of people were killed and died on both sides, Ein Lamar Shira, that maybe we should apply this idea of Ben Poi Vechal Tesmach. Again, it's not just a Perman Pesach centuries ago issue. As we saw with Osama bin Laden, this also came up interestingly after Arafat was killed. There was a discussion in Israel about what the proper reaction, celebration, response would be. So again, Rav Avadia Yosef sees this as something that we should think about and apply in our own context, our own enemies and wars. And he says, maybe we shouldn't say Shira. And then he comments, V'halal sh'armim b'mei Chanukah. We do say Halal on Chanukah, in which we had an enemy that was defeated. He says, "Hainu anes pach shemen," that the real reason we're saying challah has to do with the nes and with the rededication of the Beit HaMikdash, and that's the focus. Or he thinks the holiday of Hanukkah in general is focused on that rather than defeat, so it's appropriate. So I think it's important to note that Rav Avadia Yosef doesn't conclude that we shouldn't say challah based on this issue. His ultimate psak is that it's okay to say challah, but you shouldn't say it with a bracha. That was Rav Avadia Yosef's view. And he has this is just one piece of a very long tshuva, but I think it's important to see that both the Beit Yosef and Rav Avadia Yosef see this broad idea about rejoicing when our enemies die as having very real, practical ramifications in terms of how we commemorate our holidays of things that happened years and years and centuries and millennia ago, and things that have happened very recently right now to our own enemies. So now I'd like to get to what's wrong or right or good or bad about celebrating when your enemies rejoice. I'm also welcome to ask questions at any point and interrupt me, but if anyone has any intuitions, yes.
I was just wondering why Rabbi Avadia Yosef didn't then go on to say that saying Hallel on Yom HaTzmaut would be a celebration of Hakamat HaMedina, similar to the reason that he cites for saying Hallel on
Right.
That we do have a miracle that we're celebrating. We're not necessarily just celebrating the fall of our enemy.
Sure. I think that's a great question, and it's a question I had when I read his tshuva. I think his response might be that he sees the wars or in the way, I mean, you could ask the same thing on Pesach. We're celebrating Yetzias Mitzrayim. We're not celebrating necessarily the fact that they're dying. So he might say that the war and the bloodshed was so much more intimately connected with the success than on Hanukkah. We sort of treat the war and the Nes of Pach Shemen and the rededication of the Beit HaMikdash as two separate narratives, or not as integrally linked. And so he might say that if you're saying Hallel, either when it comes to Pesach or when it comes to Yom HaTzmaut, the bloodshed that was involved was a necessary part of Hakamat Medina, was a necessary part of Yetziat Mitzrayim, that maybe he thinks you can't totally separate it out the way he thinks was done on Hanukkah. That's one possible view.
At the end of the Megillah, the way Mordechai and Esther treat the defeat of their enemies, they make a holiday, and they talk about the loss of the holiday, and there was a war. There were definitely Jews who were killed too, I'm sure. And yet, you know, they deal with this question, and they create a holiday.
Sure, we'll get to source that discusses Purim more particularly, and we'll see, it's listed as source 17, the numbering got a little bit confused, the second plus source on this page, and we'll get to it in a little bit. But there's a question of what the holiday was and what exactly it's commemorating. We don't have like a Haman got hanged day, and he points out we didn't make Purim on the day that Haman was killed or on the day that Haman's sons were killed. So Yeah, it was a military victory. I think you can't escape the fact that, I mean, Pesach was also a military victory, and Purim was also, and Yom Kippur was also. A lot of our holidays are, you know, the classic, you know, they tried to kill us, they died, and then we eat a lot. So it's always, a lot of our celebrations are integrally connected to an enemy who is trying to destroy us. And I don't think anyone challenges that it's a really joyous thing when they're defeated, but there is a question, and I guess we'll jump into it right now, of, there are different, when we talk about celebrating and rejoicing, or answering this question of what kind of celebration is appropriate, there are a few different things that we have to look at and answer. The first two questions that I think are related are, why are we celebrating? What's our inner motivation and reasoning for celebrating? Right? There might be a difference between celebrating because I really hated that guy, and celebrating that someone who is really evil can no longer perpetrate that evil, or celebrating because the Jews were saved. So one question is our reasoning and our motivation behind the celebration. And a connected question is, well, what exactly are we celebrating? Is Purim celebrating having a holiday for Haman being hanged? Or is it having celebration of Jews being saved? And that's, it's a little bit nuanced, but that's a difference in terms of what it is that we're actually celebrating. So to look into this, look in the first few sources here under rejoicing on moral failings. And source number 8, the Ibn Ezra, comments on the Pasuk of Mishle. And he says, on the words, Al Tismach, is here Shalo Yismach Adam Al Gezeirat Hashem, Afilu Yavo, Ivo. But it's a warning not to celebrate on, even if it's clearly a Gezeirat Hashem, as it is in the case of Pesach, Purim of Yom Ha'atzmaut, Afilu Yavo, even if the person is your enemy. And on Yechadan, Rabbi Inavi says, Kalomar, Einenu Chafit Shetismach, So if you're fighting the war and defeating your enemies, it shouldn't be the satisfaction of I got revenge or I extracted revenge from someone, sort of a very personal, vindictive perspective. He thinks that's what's problematic about rejoicing over the destruction of your enemy. And similarly, number 9, the Malbim says, Pen yira Hashem v'rabe enav, that through your rejoicing, if through your rejoicing, you're demonstrating a side of you that has an element of cruelty, or I think of it as like a bloodthirstiness, that there's satisfaction that someone's hurting, or satisfaction, not that justice was done, but satisfaction that somebody that hurt you got hurt. That reflects on a side of cruelty or a vengeful characteristic that you have. And Yirmeh Masei Mumatecha, and then Hashem sees that reaction and says, well, hey, let's compare. If you have this cruelty in you, no, you don't look so dramatically different from the person who's being punished now. If in his punishment, what's coming out from you is this kind of very nasty, vindictive perspective. So it makes a really big difference, you see, from these two sources. And look now at source 10. This is Rav Avadya Bar Nur. This is a commentary on the Mishnah of Avot. So this is a commentary on the statement of Shmuel HaKatan, which again was just the Pasuk. And he says, you'll see in the first, he says, B'mpoi v'achal tismach, Pasuk u'mishle, it's just the Pasuk. Elash Shmuel HaKatan hayav ragil hochich b'nei adam b'midah zav. It's just a Pasuk, it's just that he would routinely mentioned this because he thought it was important. And Pen Yireh Hashem V'Rabe Einav Shasito B'Vavecha Ke'ilu Hu Shluchacha L'Malo Tavatecha. You're turning Hashem in rejoicing, think in this kind of bloodthirsty way, you're turning Hashem into like your tool for revenge. Like as if you were like using Hashem to satisfy your emotional wishes, as if God is doing your bidding. So, I think these first three sources here illustrate that the inner motivation that we have when someone's saying USA, USA after Osama bin Laden is killed, or when we think about things on Purim and Pesach, if it's like a cruelty that's coming out in us in being thrilled that our enemies are killed, which is very different. For example, if you look at the Rabbeinu Yonah, makes this distinction. He says in the first line, I'll skip over it, you know, what is Shmuel Katzin coming to teach us? He just did a whole pasuk, and we already have this whole pasuk, so what is he doing? And he explains again that starting at the second line, Mipnei Shehu Devar HaTzarech, this is very important, Ubnei Adam Nechshalimbo, and people, this is something people really mess up on a lot, so he just repeated it. Kigam Beheyot HaOyov Rasha, even if the enemy we're talking about is really an evil person, Eilas Moch Beravto, we shouldn't rejoice when bad happens to him, Bilti Mipnei HaShem Levado, unless your motivation, your reasoning, is just for the sake of Kivod Hashem. Ritzono lamar, ki zeha tzadik lo yismach b'mapelet harishaim, achem kavanat simchato b'pnei shem avalto kavot shemayim hu. Right? If you're rejoicing for your enemy because it makes you feel really good when your enemy is hurt or destroyed, that's a very different kind of celebration than if you're rejoicing because you think, as we say all over the Haggadah and all over the Tzimut Chaim, that it reflects the greatness of Hashem and that Hashem's name, that it's a Kiddush Hashem and people could clearly see Hashem's hand in the world. So your celebration might be the same, but the question is why it is that you're celebrating. What's your motivation, your reasoning, and your thinking when you're celebrating the destruction of an enemy? And this connects very closely to the idea, mentioned about Purim before, and that we're talking about when it comes to Hanukkah and how Hanukkah is different, related to the question of what our own personal motivation is what exactly is it that we're celebrating? You know, there might be a difference between celebrating the fact that someone really hurt and the fact that Jews were saved, the fact that there was a Kiddush Hashem. Or as the Matudat David here says, Matudat David here is commenting on a pasuk in Mishlei I skipped over, that if you turn back, it's on source 3, which is in Mishlei in Parak Yud Aleph, a little bit before the pasuk we're focusing on, says, "B'tuv tzadikim ta'alot kiriya," when good happens to tzadikim, the town rejoices. "Uva'avod rishaim rina," and with the destruction of rishaim, there is rejoicing, which obviously stands as a pretty strong contrast to the later pasuk of Mishlei, where you should not be rejoicing at the downfall of your enemies. And here it sounds like rejoicing when rishaim are destroyed is great. The Matudat David here mentions about rejoicing when the Rishayim are destroyed, Kiba odam b'chayeyim hira'u labriyo, that when they're alive, they're doing evil to other people. So I think this might be an example of what's appropriate to rejoice. When Osama bin Laden was killed, part of your reaction could have been like, oh, I'm so glad he suffered and had a lot of pain. Or your reaction also could have been that it's a wonderful thing that someone who had perpetrated attacks, was continuing to plan and perpetrate attacks, spent his entire life trying to bring pain and suffering and destruction to other people, that someone like that can no longer commit that kind of evil in this world, and that he was, in the view of many, rightfully and justfully killed so that he could no longer do that. So Matsuda David points to that's a different kind of celebration than just the celebration, for example, that the mob and Ibn Ezra were saying, the pasuk doesn't want you to be displaying your own cruelty and vindictiveness. That's different than celebrating a Kiddush Hashem, celebrating that the person can no longer commit evil, celebrating that justice was done. I think if you read the full article that Leon Wieseltier wrote after Osama bin Laden was killed, he responded to all the criticism, like, this is ridiculous. We're, like, running around with, like, flags and singing the national anthem. That's totally inappropriate. And, like, it's kind of very childish. And his response to that was that there's not just the value of Osama bin Laden being killed and he can't commit evil anymore, but there's a really powerful symbolic meaning, especially for people who experience, as many people are celebrating, saw 9/11, experienced 9/11, to say that American values triumphed, and to hold up a flag as a symbol of American values and American freedom, as opposed to the medieval, backward, and terrible values that Osama bin Laden represented, that's not just kind of petty and vindictive, but there's a lot of value to symbols. And even if the Taliban is still running and Al-Qaeda is still operating, and even though he's dead, there still is tremendous power and was tremendous power, which is why people celebrated spontaneously to the fact that a figurehead who represented that evil as a symbolic victory, that he was destroyed. And I think that valuing that kind of symbolic reaction is also the kind of what we're celebrating that might be appropriate. And the Meshneh Chachma here, this is source, this is source 17 a little bit, the numbering, sorry, my apologies, a little confused. But he talks about this very question, what it is when we're celebrating Purim, and what it is that we're celebrating Pesach. And he contrasts with the holidays, secular holidays, or the holidays of other religions, which he saw as really about, like, yes, we killed him. And he says, Lo kein Yisrael. This is not what the Jewish people, this is not what we do. Hema lo yismechu amapeladai vehem, velo yichogu besimcha azeh. The celebration and the joy that we have is not over the death or the destruction itself. The kamosha marbin pali vechal tismach. Velchein lo niskar bepesach chag hamatzot, ki bo asa b'mitzrayim shvatim, rak hiotzi Hashem et b'nei Yisrael mi'mitzrayim. So he says about Pesach, obviously we mentioned the Makot and we talk about the Kriyat Yamsuf, but when we focus on those things, we're not focusing on they hurt and they suffered, but we're focusing on Hashem took B'nai Yisrael out of Yitzhak Mitzrayim and the fact that the Makot served to show Hashem's hand in this world and the salvation that we experience rather than the death and destruction that the Mitzrayim experienced. We don't make holidays about other people dying. So again, when it comes to Chanukah, he sees the holidays about the light nes of the Shemen, the Chanukah Rabayit, and when it comes to the war, the war is certainly relevant, and the military defeat was certainly relevant, but the focus is on the hashgacha of Hashem on his nation, Israel. And v'kein b'neis Purim, when it comes to Purim, lo asu yom tov b'yom shenat la'haman. Purim isn't Haman got killed day. Right? O b'yom she hargu sonehem. And it's not the bad guys die day. Gizeh ain simcha lefneim or Israel. That's not what our celebrations and our Yom Tovim, that's not the what of what we're really celebrating. Raka Yom Tohu B'yamim Asher Nachume Aveihem. That he's referencing a pasuk from the Megillah when it talks about when they established the Yom Tov. It's about the Menucha that Am Yisrael experienced, about the Nisim that Hashem performed subtly in the case of Megillah Esther. He says, She'ena Simcha Rak Al HaMenucha V'al Al Yom HaHerig B'Soneihem. That the celebration that we have is about the Menucha they experienced, and about the simcha they experienced from being saved, from seeing Hashem's hand, the relationship between Hashem and Am Yisrael, and is less focused on the actual death and actual hurt that people suffering. So sometimes I find distinctions to draw, and I'm not sure that everyone would agree with the formulation here of the Meshneh Chachma. But additionally, that it's important that when we think about Purim and Pesach, or Rosh Hashanah, B'Ladan, and Yasser Arafat, that the what we're celebrating and why we're celebrating is very important. And we'll look here under Timing Matters, the Torah Tamima, so also a recent Perush. He points out what I mentioned earlier, kind of problem that a lot of the sources we talk about in Pali Vecha and Pesach, that Hashem, I don't want to hear the Shira, my creations are drowning in the water right now, my handiwork. But we have a Yashir, which is also Shira. And that doesn't seem to be taken with any negativity. So there are different distinctions to be made between these two different Shiras. And one of them is drawn here by the Torah Tamima. And he says, Ma'aseh yadai kanoya matzrayim, when we talk about the work of my hands that's drowning in the water, Hashem is obviously referring to the Mitzrayim, de'ech shuhayim b'ruim kechol adam. You know, that even if they're evil and even if they are oppressors, at some level, they're still God's creations. They're still the work of God's hands. So if that's true and Hashem says, I don't want to hear your Shira, so then we have a little bit of a problem with Az Yashir, and why was that okay? And when we do the Torah reading on Pesach, we similarly mention it. After the Mitzrayim were drowning. But Tzarech Lamar, in his distinction, is Kevan de Hatzviah Haita Belaila, Nechon Shalol Lamar Belaila, Avol Biyom Shlamar Chato Shari. So he says there's a difference that the Mitzrayim actually were drowning during the night, and you should not, and if you look back on the Midrash that talks about Hashem saying, I don't want to hear the Shira, It's as it's going on. The Malachim are saying, oh, they're drowning. I want to say Shira to you now as this is happening. And Hashem says, no. The Torah Tumim says, well, there's a difference between singing as people are dying and celebrating a day later. So when I read the source, I don't want to be too graphic, but I remember when Saddam Hussein, after that trial, Saddam Hussein was hanged. And I didn't watch this video, but there was a video. It was videotaped and it was circulating around the internet where as he was being hanged, there were crowds in the area that were cheering and celebrating as he was being executed for what he had done. And I think at the time, again, this is also something that there was a lot of discussion and debate back and forth. Should we celebrate? Should we not? But I think a lot of people thought there was a big difference between cheering and celebrating as someone is being executed right then while the mitzvah are drowning, and saying once the person has been killed, that this is cause for rejoicing, for celebrating that someone who perpetrated such incredible evil and responsible for the death of so many innocent people, the fact that he's dead. And I think this is the distinction. This might relate to what we were talking about earlier about the why. That if you're perhaps cheering and celebrating while the person is being destroyed, while they're suffering, that maybe that reflects a sort of cruelty or that midah nekama that the Ibn Ezra Malbim were talking about, and that should be a solemn moment and it shouldn't be a party. But that once that is done and once the person is no longer here and has been justly killed or justly defeated, that some separation in time between what's happened and the rejoicing would be more appropriate, and we can think, instead of a visceral reaction like occurred when Saddam Hussein was killed, we can think about the Kavod Hashem, the Kiddush Hashem, the people who suffered and now see justice, the people who can no longer commit this kind of evil, or other types of celebration that might be more appropriate than cheering as someone is dying right now. And finally, you'll see you have 2 minutes left, so I'll go through these sources quickly. Another distinction that can be drawn, that is drawn by some sources, between the Az Yashir Shira of B'nai Yisrael and the Malachim being told, please step back. My handiwork is dying right now. I don't want to hear that, is actually drawn here in Sanhedrin. I'll read the first line and the last couple lines. Amar Rabbi Acha bar Bechanina, Vavod Rishayim Rina. So quoting that earlier pasuk from Mishlei, that we rejoice when enemies are defeated. Vavod Achav ben Amri Rina. So it says, who is this Russia that you should really rejoice? It's Achav, which, as you know from the Torah, was a incredibly evil king responsible for killing who he wanted to kill because he wanted the fields, and just an incredibly evil figure. And then the Gemara says, "Michadi kutcha brichu b'mal paltan sharashayim." Does Hashem really rejoice even at the destruction of Rishayim? Then there's some discussion back and forth. And now I'm at the end of the third line. So Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachman quotes that midrash that we've been talking about, "Karav zaza kol alayla." Hashem doesn't rejoice when enemies are killed, right? Hashem says, I don't want to hear the Shira because the Mitzrayim are drowning and they're my handiwork. And that response that's given, or one answer that's given in this Gemara, is Huwe Nosas. Hashem doesn't rejoice about Acheirim Mesis. So Hashem's not going to rejoice, but there's a difference between Hashem rejoicing and people rejoicing, which is a fascinating distinction. That Hashem says, I don't want the Melchim, I don't want to hear Shira, I'm not rejoicing, but based on the Pasuk of Mishlei, even if Hashem doesn't rejoice, it might still be okay for people to rejoice. I think the Chok Yaakov here, again in the context of Pesach, brings this idea down in a very concrete way, and he says, Dafka ha-Halal, it's specifically Halal that we don't say on Pesach. Lomar Shira l'fnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because that's like saying Shira to Hashem the way the Malachim would, that reflects that Hashem himself is rejoicing at this, ki'ilu yesh simcha lefanav, as if Hashem himself were rejoicing. So Hashem says, I'm not rejoicing. This is not a source of joy for me, because at whatever level, these are still my creations, these are still my creatures. So we don't say halal, right? We don't say hallel because of that reason. But we still say Zman Simchatenu, and there's still some element of celebration as long as we're not projecting it, sort of, onto Hashem and saying that it's understanding that if in Hashem will say we don't rejoice, there may be room for people to still rejoice. Now, I find this source a little bit confounding, because we generally say that we try to, the extent of our role in this world is to reflect and imitate godliness as much as we can. So to say that Hashem doesn't rejoice and that he doesn't want to because of the loss of his own creatures, but that it might be okay for people to rejoice in a way that wouldn't reflect Hashem's disposition, whatever that means, is a very odd thing. And I think one way of explaining this is that if someone themselves experienced 9/11, or if someone themselves experienced the suffering and the pain at the hands of a particular enemy, that there's sort of a little bit of leeway or permission allowed for their subjective experience, that we allow them to rejoice and don't expect them to have the sort of objective view that Hashem would have, and that even if on an objective level God's creations are being destroyed and he doesn't have full Shira, if someone themselves has the Russia in their city and experience the oppression at the hands of that Russia, that there might be some room for distinction there. Yeah.
Maybe another distinction is that in Yitzhak Mitzrayim, Hashem, it was very clear that Hashem destroyed the Mitzrayim. There was no B'nai Yisrael army shooting at the Mitzrayim, where they themselves are not rejoicing in the fact that they spilled blood, but they're rejoicing in that Hashem took care of Hashem did. Whereas Hashem did it, and he's modeling for us not to rejoice when we ourselves, with our armies, defeat.
I think that's a great answer, and I think it also connects to what we saw before, where some of Farshim say that when you're exacting revenge, when you're the one fighting, don't do that for a personal vengefulness, bloodthirsty perspective, but if you're doing it, as the Rabbeinu Yonah says, for Kavod Hashem, and that's your motivation, that's a different type of celebration. I'm going to have to wrap up really quickly because I'm going to get kicked out because I'm already running over time. So I think in this topic, as in many topics, as in most topics in Torah, there isn't one very obvious, clear answer about what the right way to celebrate is, the wrong way to celebrate is. I do think we see clearly that there is an idea and a strain of sources that relate that there's some element of restraint when people, even people who are incredibly evil, have had to experience suffering because in order for B'nai Yisrael to be saved, there's some element of, I don't know if sadness is the right word, but restraint, where we pull back our own simcha a little bit, and that whenever we celebrate, even if we are celebrating, we have to think about the why, what's motivating us, what's our real reason, if it's a personal hatred or understanding that this is the right thing and that it's Hashem who's doing it, and also the timing point that the Torah Tamima mentioned, that maybe we shouldn't celebrate as the person is suffering, but the next morning, the way that Az Yashir was done. And also, final point is how we celebrate. And I'll note very quickly that even in our society, there's a big difference between how we celebrate a birthday and how we celebrate a wedding and how we celebrate other sorts of things that we would like to rejoice over. And so the manner in which we go about celebrating, what we're singing, how we conduct ourselves and how we behave, makes a big difference. So hopefully as we go forward and celebrate Purim and Pesach, we can keep this view of mind in our celebrating of those Yamim Tovim. Thank you so much.